Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning is State of Michigan against the United States Army Corps of Engineers, number 12-3800, and we are ready when you are.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Robert Reichel. I represent the states of Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians. This extraordinary coalition of states and tribal governments has joined together to fight an extraordinary threat to the rights of our citizens in the Great Lakes, the threat posed by the invasion of Asian carp of Lake Michigan and other connected waterways. We're here because the district court, we allege, wrongly dismissed our claim for equitable relief based on the federal common law of public nuisance, the same claim that this court, in a prior stage of this case, found not only cognizable, but one which, at least at the preliminary injunction stage, you concluded was likely to succeed on the merits.
We also said that when you're considering a question of a preliminary injunction, I'll put it this way, you have to decide what the marginal benefit of that injunction will be over what's actually happening in the background. And I guess my biggest question for you in some ways is, even if I were to agree with you that the district judge was mistaken when he said that existing federal statutes require through navigation, it seems that they at least authorize it. And so I'm wondering what you think an injunction will accomplish above and beyond what the responsible agencies are doing right now.
Judge Wood, the key thing that we think an injunction would accomplish, an injunction which, as we've made clear, would include a request that the Corps and the district take every step within their control to expeditiously develop a plan for an effective permanent remedy, which is what we have sought in our complaint.
But you seem to focus very much on, you're very careful about this, so I admire the care in the brief. But it's very clear that the permanent remedy that the states and the tribes advocate is the permanent physical separation of the Mississippi River Basin and the Great Lakes, hydrological separation, if you want to call it that. And yet, at the same time, you're saying, well, the Corps just needs to have a plan so that it can go to Congress and complete the next necessary steps. But if it's just a plan, then why aren't the eight plans that are in the Glimmers report the kind of thing you're looking for?
For two reasons. The Glimmers report, as the Court knows, having taken notice of it, evaluated an array of eight different options, two of
right.
which included some variations on hydrologic separation. But what was critically absent in the report, and what the Corps failed to do despite the invitation from Congress, was to make an actual recommendation, number one, and number two, to use its existing statutory authority under Section 1538 of the Progress Act to take the next step, to proceed directly to pre-construction engineering and design.
But I understand that they just put these plans on the table, and two of them don't really involve doing very much, Plan 1 and Plan 2. Plans 3 through 8 are all in the multiple billions of dollars, of construction. But I gather the comment deadline is a very short one, March 3rd, for these plans. And so I just am not sure how the process isn't working.
It's not working, Your Honor, because, number one, the Corps is not approaching, again, taking the allegations in our complaint as true, as we
mm-hmm.
must for Rule 12b-6, what we allege in substance is that the existing measures, including the electrical barrier, netting, and so forth, are not sufficient to avert this threat, which, as this Court previously noted, may actually be growing every day. So time is of the essence. The longer the present condition with ineffective, we allege, measures, or not fully effective measures, persists, the greater the risk that we will, before this case is finally concluded, we will reach a tipping point.
Do any of the eight that are set out in this report satisfy you?
The two options identify hydrologic separation. One of them, which is characterized as the mid-system separation alternative, I can get into the details of that, is closest to the kind of plan that the plaintiff states believe, based on the existing record, would be most appropriate. But
is that, do you have a number for that? Is that 6 or 7 or 8?
That is number...
They all seem to speak of mid-system separation, so that's why I'm asking.
I believe that's number 5, Your Honor. Let me verify that.
Lakefront hydrological
separation? No, I'm sorry, number 6.
Number 6, okay.
But let me make a point very clear, Judge Mannion. While conceptually that approaches, it's a conceptual approach that is somewhat similar to what we believe would be most appropriate, there are significant problems with it. And the crux of this is, at this point, it is just a conceptual plan. The Corps has not committed itself, hasn't even urged Congress to undertake that. For that kind of a plan to actually be implemented, to make a difference on the ground, to afford the plaintiffs effective relief, we need to go farther, and we need to go farther as soon as possible to actually develop a more detailed plan and then seek any requisite congressional authorization, including the consent to the construction of physical barriers in the waterway at strategic locations that would be required under Section 401 of the Rivers and Harbors Act.
Let me just ask you kind of a practical question. Are there any physical barriers that the Corps could place and cause that would not force the cause to close, or do all the physical barriers effectively close the cause?
Judge Williams, let me be clear. The physical barriers would interrupt at probably at least 2 strategic points the flow of water in both directions. They would not, and this is critical, we're not asking the court to direct the Corps to come up with a plan to end the cause, to undo it, to end all navigation. On the contrary, what we have suggested, and we seek the opportunity to prove at trial, that an opportunity exists to come up with a plan that while it would interrupt at certain points the existing patterns of navigation, it would not end it. So that with respect to issues regarding the balance of harms and an injunction, that can be addressed. But the critical point is the plaintiff states are not asking the district court to direct the Corps to pursue authorization of, quote, ending all navigation or just closing the cause.
But it's an important question because I'm having trouble visualizing how you can have the kind of separation you're talking about without an interruption of navigation, perhaps needing to offload containers from one set of barges and put them onto another. I mean, I don't know what you're talking about that wouldn't have a substantial disruptive effect on navigation.
Again, to put it simply, yes, there would be some alteration of existing patterns of navigation. But
what does that mean? I don't know what you...
What it means is the waterway.
If you can't just float the boat, you know, down the waterway to the Mississippi, you've made a significant change. Maybe it's a necessary change. I'm not trying to discuss that right now, but I want us to be as clear as possible about what we're talking about without euphemisms, without anything else.
Let me try to address that. What we're talking about, and again, conceptually, there are illustrations of this idea both in one of the options in the Glimmers report and also in the report proposed issued 2 years ago by the Great Lakes Commission, which we noted in our papers, which goes even farther in explaining and illustrating conceptually what this might look like. And again, what it would look like is navigation could proceed from New Orleans all the way up to points in the Chicago waterway, but not all the way through to Lake Michigan. And at those 2 points, probably, strategically located points, there would need to be a shift of cargo or goods to some alternate mode of transportation or physically around that. But on either side of these physical barriers, both on the downriver side, heading down towards New Orleans, and towards the lake, navigation could continue. And so, for example, cargoes...
Let me just make sure, because that's why I asked the question. Yep. So the bottom line, though, is... they would go so far, and then they'd have to, because I just want to just make sure I'm understanding this, and then it'd have to be offloaded, presumably trucks or something like that, offloaded, and then continue the rest of the journey?
There are a variety of options that could do that, depending on the cargo we're talking about. One option, conceptually illustrated by the Great Lakes Commission, would be if it's a bulk cargo. Well, you could put it on train cars, you could put it on rail cars. It could be physically loaded by a crane over or around the barrier. But it's also, again, without getting too deep in the weeds, it's important to recognize that the existing patterns of these commercial cargoes are such that it's very rare for something, the cargo, to get to its endpoint destination without being shifted to some other mode anyway. So it's not as if the relief that we're requesting would require a wholesale disruption of navigation or of the flow of commerce and goods through the area. It would require some changes.
Right. So there actually I have several other questions. One of them is, of course, navigation is only one of the concerns that the city and others have. The two other big concerns are the sanitary system operation and flood control. So those are both in there. So that's kind of one set of questions. The other, though, is which I'd like you to focus on first. The other part of the district court's finding is that the current set of statutes that govern the Corps, I will say, at least authorize the Corps to operate the cause as just a through navigation pathway from Lake Michigan down ultimately to the Mississippi River. And if it's authorized, then why doesn't it, in fact, fall within, you know, whether it's Restatement 821B or whether it's at a more general federal common law level, why is this something, until Congress speaks otherwise, that we should tell the Corps it can't consider?
Well, there are two reasons. First, the principle that the Restatement Comment F talks about, the principle that something, conduct fully authorized by statute, is considered per se reasonable. And, of course, a public nuisance is an unreasonable interference with rights common to the public.
But what is full? What do you understand the term fully authorized to mean?
I believe in this context that you have to compare the alleged acts and omissions of the complaint to what Congress has fully or specifically authorized. And in this context, while we don't dispute that through a series of statutes, the Congress authorized the Corps to build these structures, gave the money to keep funding them in the interest of navigation.
Mm-hmm.
But the question presented is, taking the allegations, one more point, as we have argued and as this court previously agreed, Congress has not yet displaced the federal common law of public nuisance related to this kind of interstate water pollution. It has addressed some subject, but it hasn't displaced. So we submit that this body of federal common law of interstate water pollution still exists. And under that body of law, we submit, given the allegations of the complaint, the Corps and the district's failure to do additional steps within their control to reduce this threat and ultimately take away the threat of the invasion is unreasonable. And so, for example, in our brief, we can illustrate this point by a hypothetical. Let's posit for a moment, instead of harmful invasive fish, we were talking about a spill of a toxic chemical into the cause or some other navigable waterway where Congress had authorized navigation. I don't believe under this, and we'll posit that there is a significant threat to public health, safety, or welfare, and that the only way to address that is, at least temporarily, to interrupt the navigation while appropriate remedial measures are taken, whatever they may be. I submit that applying this principle of fully authorized and reasonableness of the defendant's conduct, we submit the situation here is analogous. It is not, under these circumstances, given the lack of reliability and efficacy of the existing measures, the electrical barriers, reasonable for the Corps to continue to proceed at the way it's done now, not fully utilizing its authority to focus on and come up with an effective plan and then do whatever is within their power to get the requisite approval for that plan.
So just to be clear on the allegations of your complaint alleges that eDNA continues to be detected in water lakeward, I'll call it, roughly north, but lakeward of the existing barriers. And your complaint alleges, I guess, that these two big head carp were caught. But are there any other allegations in your complaint suggesting the ineffectiveness of the existing measures?
Yes. Both, we allege that the, I don't have the word right in front of it, but we allege that the efficacy of the barrier, that the barrier is, to use the court's own phrase from a few years ago, temporary and experimental. It is not necessarily a sustainable long-term solution.
No,
we also allege that it goes on and off. It doesn't operate continuously. And so I think looking at the allegations of the complaint as a whole, and again, accepting them as true, since this is not a proven or established technology, and one which at least circumstantially there is evidence that has been ineffective, we believe, accepting those as true, that given that, it is not reasonable to continue to rely primarily and indefinitely on those kinds of measures.
But essentially, though, you don't have anything other than the two things I mentioned, the eDNA and the two big head, as concrete evidence that it's failing. You are saying that it's on and off, and you're saying some other things that sound to me like likely to fail or might fail or something like that. But I didn't see any other. In fact, the last I was able to find that the on the website for the Asian Carp, they have their own website, of course, Facebook page soon, that the sampling results, they're not finding the carp, right?
Physically catching fish?
Actually, seeing carp.
That's correct. Not on the waterway per se. There have been some carp collected in other isolated lakes in the region.
Right.
But
those are the two big head I was mentioning, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, one of the big heads that was the subject of our complaint, specifically, alleged in the complaint, was one that was found in Lake Calumet several years ago. But,
right.
Judge, I think that if you look at the allegations of our complaint, which say, at the appendix at pages 13, excuse me, our appendix pages 15 to 16, paragraph 53, information available to the district and the court demonstrates that even when completed, the dispersal barrier system cannot prevent the migration of the carp through this. Among other things, A, the system is experimental. B, there's the acknowledged possibility of bypass. The eDNA, the capture of the big head carp, the rapid migration of the fish. We allege a series of facts, which again, given the fairly limited standard, but important standard of 12b-6, alleging facts that plausibly state some claim for relief. The point is that these, accepting these as true, we believe that one can draw a reasonable inference that it is not reasonable for the Corps under these circumstances to continue to do that and to put off what we allege is a truly effective measure. Now, Judge Woods, you had started to ask me another question, and I apologize
for
that.
I'm going to let you, if you want to save time for rebuttal, I'm going to leave you that option. I was just mentioning that there was the storm, there was the flood issue and the sanitary treatment aspects of the cause as well.
Yes, and I can address that either now or rebuttal, as you please.
You can wait.
One other question, just briefly, Your Honor. I don't want to use my remaining rebuttal time, but as you know, the court has asked you to address the issue of mootness. I'm prepared to do that now briefly, if you would like.
Okay.
As you know, the Corps on January 6th issued this so-called glimmerous, apologize for the acronym.
It should probably be glamorous, actually, for L-A-K-E, but anyway, it's glamorous.
Issued the report.
Yes.
And again, for purposes of mootness, it suggested that mooted the claim for relief. As we pointed out in our response to the motion, I can briefly highlight here, if you compare what we asked for in our request for relief, which was quite specific, it wasn't just do a glamorous report within 18 months, but it specifically requested a certain kind of content, recommending physical separation. That's in paragraph 2B of our request for relief. Then going on to paragraph 3B with respect to the permanent injunction, we are asking for an order requiring the court to take all necessary and appropriate measures to, as expeditiously as possible, develop and implement a plan. And again, while the Corps has done its report, there is no plan, there is no recommendation. There is still an existing controversy, and the district court could grant us effective relief.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gray.
Thank you. Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Michael Gray. I'm here on behalf of the Corps of Engineers. The District Court's dismissal of the complaint ought to be affirmed, and I have 4 points to make. The first is that the conduct that's alleged to constitute the public nuisance is authorized by statute.
Well, that really depends, doesn't it, on the degree of detail you're looking at. And I would like you to respond to the point that Mr. Reichel made a few minutes ago about the Corps' authority when damaging events occur, like an oil spill, or for that matter, like a bunch of carp escaping into the waterway. Are you telling me that the Corps has no authority to close the cause even temporarily to address such matters?
No. The Corps clearly has some operational flexibility under its statutes, and in the case of an event like he posited, where you have a chemical spill, I think the Corps could take measures on a temporary basis, but that's not what the complaint here asks for. The complaint asks for a permanent hydrologic separation of the basins.
Well, I'm hoping that by the end of this process, we can all be talking about the same thing. That would be a step in the right direction, in my opinion. So it's very obvious to you, to all of us, that what the states would like is the permanent hydrological separation. But they're trying not to anticipate the end of the process, and I think what they are asking for is for the Corps to settle on a plan, which would be the final agency action. Presumptively, that's what the Corps would then put before Congress, but if it were a final agency action, there could even be an APA challenge to it if it was seen to be an ineffective plan. There are lots of things that I can imagine. So it seems possible to me that the Corps could choose one of the options, one of these 8 options that you've identified, maybe Plan 4, which is not the one that the states like, a mere 10 years to implement and only a little short of $8 billion as opposed to these $25 billion options. And then, you know, let the fun begin. One could go forward with that. So I think they are short of asking us, at least, to order hydrological separation.
I think it's important when considering that to keep in mind the context of the complaint here. What they're alleging is a common law public nuisance, and the complaint is tied, I think, specifically to the hydrologic separation. As for those other interim measures in developing a plan, the complaint puts those in the APA count, and I think for just the reasons that you described, the way you would challenge these sorts of actions is you get a final agency action challenge under the APA. And of course, the APA also governs under 706.1 failures to act. So if they have a claim that the Corps has unlawfully failed to act, they can bring that under the APA. But what they can't do is, having alleged that hydrologic separation is the, or hydrologic connection is the nuisance and sought hydrologic separation, to then try to shoehorn those APA type claims into the public nuisance count and say that also constitutes a public nuisance. Because even if you accept all of the allegations as true on the interim measures that they've sought, you would have no nuisance without the hydrologic connection. And even if we did everything that they wanted us to do, you would still have a nuisance under their theory because of the hydrologic separation.
Well, that's their theory. I mean, maybe that wouldn't be the case, but they've asked in the preliminary injunction for quite a few interim measures that seem actually pretty easy. You know, closing the sluice gates at O'Brien and the controlling works in Wilmette, and putting screens in and using rotenone more aggressively. I mean, there are things that don't sound like hydrological separation to me that might, at the margins, affect things.
And those matters are all pleaded as part of the APA claim. They're not alleged to independently cause a public nuisance. They've not appealed the dismissal of the APA claim. We're here only to review whether they've stated a claim for a federal common law public nuisance.
But once you remove the public nuisance they're alleging is the imminent invasion of the silver and bighead carp, not the failure to close.
What the complaint says on this front is that the risk that Asian, this is in paragraph 89, it's in the appendix on 30, the risk that Asian carp have and will migrate into Lake Michigan exists precisely because the district created and implemented the diversion project, which is the cause, and because the district and the Corps are maintaining and operating the infrastructure of that project in a manner that allows those fish to migrate. It's tied specifically to the operation of the cause. You can't separate the two out. That's where they've said over and over again, that's the central and ultimate problem that they have, and the central and ultimate relief, and having staked out that's the public nuisance that they allege, and those operations, as you said, are at least authorized
by statute. My problem with that way of looking at it, and maybe there's just a lack of clarity, is it seems to me that the public nuisance is, if there were no carp, nobody would be talking about this. So I feel as though the public nuisance is the imminent invasion, the alleged imminent invasion of the carp into the Great Lakes system. The remedy for that nuisance that they're looking for, the only remedy that they seem to think will suffice, is the permanent hydrological separation.
And the key piece I think is missing in that theory is you have to have a responsible actor. If the nuisance is only the carp swimming up and down, then the Corps is not responsible. That's why they tie it to the Corps' actions, and I think they have to tie it to the Corps' actions in order to state the claim. Otherwise, we're not liable for the independent movement of carp. They have to tie it to some action
So the reason the carp are able to invade is because of decisions that the Corps took over a century, basically.
Right. Exactly, and all of those decisions were, we think, required by statute, at the very least authorized by statute, starting in the 1930 Act that said go build the connection precisely for navigation, the 46 Act for the O'Brien Lock that says build this O'Brien Lock for barge navigation, the 81 Act for the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal that says the navigational mission of this canal is now the Corps to discharge, and the 83 Act for the Chicago Lock.
But I don't understand why. I mean, nobody was thinking of Asian carp, which had not yet escaped from their farm in Mississippi at the time all of these statutes were passed. And so I come back to the idea that this is a new problem, and there are statutes that also address the responsibility to prevent invasive species from ruining the ecosystem of the United States.
And it certainly, as a new problem, is Congress's obligation to address the problem, not this court. I mean, and it's a new problem, sure, but I think it was certainly foreseeable when they created the system that fish and other organisms would be able to move from one part of the system to the other where they couldn't have before. They may not have been worried about Asian carp, but it's certainly a consequence of connecting the basins that they would be able to move. And so I think you have to look at that and say, well, this is a decision by Congress to authorize navigation, and the Corps' conduct in maintaining the navigational connection is in itself a nuisance because it's authorized by law, and all of the interim measures, as I've discussed, are not independently alleged in the complaint to themselves be a nuisance. They're in the APA claim, and there would be a nuisance with or without doing those measures. So I think you have to look at the navigational connection and where it's authorized. I think that's the end of it.
So let me ask you this question. This is just a practical question. You may not know the answer. I understand that the deadline for comments that the Corps has imposed for this GLMRS study is March 3rd, 2014, so very soon. So after the comments are in, is there any presumptive period of time during which the Corps thinks about it and then issues a final decision?
I don't think there's a presumptive period of time. I think it's going to depend on what the comments are. I think the Corps...
Depend on what?
What the comments are. And the Corps is obviously going to have to synthesize those, take them into account. I mean, the Corps' next step here is to meet with stakeholders. It's having a series of public meetings. And there's one today in Michigan. And taking comments... Excuse me?
Stakeholders, you said.
Yes.
People who have an interest.
Yes, people who have an interest.
It's an unlimited number.
It is, in fact.
Well, the problem, as I see it, is there's boat access, there's carp access. And that seems to be where we're stuck. And of course, if they recited it, what they would hope is some sort of barrier, even to the point where a crane lifts all the cargo over a permanent barrier into some other, perhaps, floating mechanism. Otherwise, you got to unload and move it over the ground. If the boat can move, the carp can move. I guess I have sort of a quixotic look at this and say, isn't there whatever we would call it, something I jotted them down, a siren song or a Judas goat or a fatal attraction for these fish. Somehow or other, they'd all commit suicide. And therefore, we don't have to worry about all this. That apparently is not anybody's research. Is that?
Well, I think they have research, for example, a poison that would be specific
only
to
that,
carp only. I mean, they're researching lots of different options to try to deal with the problem. And I understand the court's concern, and in the core understands the magnitude of the problem here, and is engaged fully in attempting to address it. And I think that process needs to be let play out. It's not the court's role here to step in and begin ordering on the basis of an amorphous common law theory to start directing agency action. I mean, let's be clear here. What the complaint seeks in this case is really an unprecedented and unnecessary expansion of the federal common law. The federal common law is developed only as necessary, the Supreme Court has said over and over. And so far, the only time it's found the development of federal common law to be necessary is where you have a state suit against a state and you need a federal rule of decision. And that's hardly ever going to be the case when you have a federal agency, and it's certainly not going to be the case here where they seek to direct the way a federal agency discharges its statutory duties. Because as we've said, agencies can only act as they're empowered by statute.
Well, is it possible to have Congress do something and have a statute? I don't know the answer. That's the trouble. You have many states that are represented. They are all represented by different legislators. And that I know nobody wants to. Somebody getting elected to something doesn't want to step into this.
Well, I think the remedy here lies with Congress. And you know, the states, they're certainly capable of representing their interests in Congress. But I do want to make...
Let me throw a different thought at... If the core... I mean, I take it there's ongoing study of what's happening to these things. There are these monthly reports to see if any carp are detected beyond the various electrical barriers, and et cetera, et cetera. The plans in Glimrus are notable by how long they're going to take to implement. Most of the more aggressive plans, you're talking about a 25-year, you know, $10 to $15 billion process. And yet, if you read the state's complaint, the carp may not be willing to wait 25 years before they decide to swim in. So that's why I think the states are saying, at least as an interim measure, you've got to, you know, shut the locks, and you've got to lower the sluice gates, and you've got to put the nets in, and you've got to do all these other things. Because, I mean, 25 years strikes me as a long time.
And they've made those requests to the agencies responsible for carrying them out. And those expert agencies have decided that they're not necessary right now. And I don't think this court, for all the reasons I've said, can use the federal common law of public nuisance to direct away a federal agency carries out its statutory responsibility. You have the APA that's available to review final agency actions and to compel agency actions. If you take that course, you're going to undermine, for example, the doctrine of when there's no law to apply, committed to agency discretion by law. Not Heckler against Cheney. Yes, not reviewable under the APA. You're going to undermine the 7061 claim for failure to act in the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance v. Norton case from the Supreme Court that says you need a discrete obligation to act, a statutory obligation to act, before a court can order you to act with a failure to act. That case was about off-road vehicle use that the plaintiffs wanted wanted the Department of Interior to stop and regulate more heavily off-road vehicle use. That is easily falls within the same sort of rubric as a federal common law public nuisance claim. And the
so
court,
do you think the Corps would be entitled, if it wanted to decide, well, after all, we don't think the Asian carp are that big a problem because Chef, whoever he is in New Orleans, you know, has figured out a way that these can be a great food source, and so we've decided that it's fine if they all just swim on into the Great Lakes. Do you think that decision is within the Corps' authority?
I think it is within their authority, and it would have to be reviewable under the APA. I don't think you can use the federal common law of public nuisance as some sort of backstop to govern how the agency operates. I think you have to go through the Administrative Procedure Act.
So essentially you're arguing that there is, in fact, displacement, even though we found last time around that when Congress passes a bunch of statutes saying study this, it's not really the same thing as the Clean Air Act or the Federal Water Pollution Control Act or the other truly displacing statutes.
It's a slightly different argument that I'm making, because I think the displacement argument goes to the area of law generally and any action that might be filed under that area of substantive law. So in the Clean Air Act, I don't think you can ever state a common law public nuisance claim.
And that's a very elaborate statute. We can all agree.
I think that's right. But the point I'm making here is slightly different, which is that the court has said you only develop federal common law, even when it's not displaced, when it's necessary, and where you have federal statutes that govern a federal agency's conduct, and you have the ability to review those under the APA, it is hardly ever going to be necessary. This is the same sort of argument as like Alexander v. Sandoval, where for implied rights of actions.
Right.
You don't imply statutory rights of action when federal agencies are involved, generally because the APA is there to review agency action. I think it's the same.
But let me just look at it from a somewhat different point of view, which is that of the federal adjective here, federal common law. The problem of the CARP is not a Chicago problem. It's not even a Chicago waterways problem, and it's not even just a federal problem. It's an international problem. The Great Lakes form part of our international boundary with Canada. That's a classic place where the federal government needs to step in, where Illinois may have one view and Michigan may have another view and the rest of the plaintiff states or the various tribes or whomever, the government of Canada for all I know. So why isn't that the kind of place like other places where the Supreme Court has found federal nuisance?
It might be if you took the federal government and the federal action out of this, and what you had was, say you had the state of Illinois created the conditions itself, and the state of Michigan didn't like it, sued the state of Illinois, and you don't have a federal rule of decision, then you might need to develop federal common law as between those two states. But the point I'm making is where the federal government's involved already, and a federal agency's involved, it can only act as it's authorized by statute.
That takes us back to whether the Corps' authorization should be interpreted reasonably to empower it also to take necessary steps to stop damage, you know, to waterways, whether it's oil spill damage or whether it's chemical spill or whether it's, you know, if somebody let loose a bunch of piranhas in the water that were attacking people or whatever.
And as I said, I think the Corps has some limited authority to adjust project operations on temporary basis. I mean, you see this with drought conditions, and the Corps has to make choices on which of its project authorizations is it going to discharge because of the drought conditions. And you see this in other circumstances. Certainly the Corps has some operational flexibility. But again, that flexibility is reviewed under the APA. Our objection here is that the court can't step in on a federal common law nuisance theory and say, I don't like the way that you've chosen to operate. we're going to direct your operations within your operational discretion. I don't think that's a proper function for a federal court dealing with a federal agency. And so we would ask that the district court dismissal of the complaint be affirmed.
All right, thank you. Anything further, Mr. Reichel?
Yes, Your Honor. Hopefully I have a couple of minutes left. A couple of points
we
responding to Mr. Gray.
Yeah.
First, again, with respect to his contention that our claims here are based entirely upon the Administrative Procedures Act, I don't think that's a fair reading of the complaint. I'll just leave it at that. I think if you look at the way our complaint is structured.
You mean the remedies you're asking for are not exclusive to the APA? Okay.
Correct. Secondly, the suggestion that somehow the district court is powerless to act unless and until the Corps makes a final agency decision reviewable under the APA, again, we submit fails for the reasons we've previously discussed, that even though Congress has addressed this subject, there is not yet displacement. And I think with respect to the suggestion that, in essence, everything is under control, the Corps is on this, and just wait until they make a final decision, which we can seek review under the APA. The sad truth, Your Honor, the reason that this litigation is still ongoing in this court and why we want you to send it back to the district court where we can prove our allegations is that, for whatever reasons, the Corps has not made a decision. The Corps has the authority today. Congress has given it to them, not merely to evaluate options, but to identify a project, start designing it, and then go back to Congress to get the funding for it. They can do that. They are not prohibited from doing that. And we submit that given their responsibility, statutorily and otherwise, for operating this system, proposing changes to this system, they are breaching a duty. They are acting unreasonably by relying on these ineffective measures. And every day, increasing the risk that we will get to the point where it's too late, where
if
enough curb get in, I'm sorry.
If they come up with an option, maybe not the ones listed, that you don't like, and say, okay, here's the rule, this is what's going to happen, it's going to take some risk that those boats are going to be able to get through and we'll have various impediments, then what do? File an injunction? If they come up with a proposal, you say they have the authority to do it and to go ahead and do it. You want a decision, a solution.
Yes.
And if the solution is one you don't like, well, then you come back to court and try to enjoin it, I guess.
I guess we would, I don't mean to be flippant, but it's difficult to conjecture what that would be. The relief that we are seeking, just to be clear, is the opportunity to go into the district court to prove the allegations in our complaint and to prove the substance of our allegation that under the circumstances presented, the reasonable course of action is to develop a plan for this kind of remedy. And depending on the facts as they exist at the time, seeking as appropriate other interim relief. That's what we are asking for.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We will take the case under advisement.